First, the phrases alternative facts and fake news have been used a lot during this presidential administration. The president has accused news outlets of lying and making stuff up. Critics of President Trump point toward multiple fact checks, rating his statements as false. And of course, lying isn't just in the world of politics. It's part of all our lives, starts in our cognitive development as children, too.
Our next guest says lying is just part of being human. Udijit Bhattacharjee joins us now. He's the author of Why We Lie in this month's National Geographic. You can find a link to that article on the Central Time Facebook page. He's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Spy Who Couldn't Spell. Udijit, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me, Veronica.
Well, you write that to lie is human. Maybe not the prettiest way of thinking about what it means to be human, but apparently it's true. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that we are sort of programmed to develop the capacity for lying at a very early age. And this is sort of a muscle that we use throughout our lives in small and big ways. And we all do it. Lying is universal. It's natural. And we have to come to terms with it.
It's something that has been in the forethought of a lot of people's minds over the last year or two. And you write that our ability as a society to separate truth from lies is under unprecedented threat. Can you tell us why that is?
Well, there's two aspects to this. The first is, of course, what I just mentioned, that we have this intrinsic kind of nature to lie on occasion. And along with that, we're also extremely gullible because we also have an extremely trusting nature. So when you put those two things together, we're already in trouble. Now, add to that social media and the technologies of today, where you can spread information rapidly with the click of a mouse or the tap of a finger, and you've got a very kind of a unique situation that that we haven't seen before in history, where people can push out alternative facts or plain falsehoods, and there'll be lots of takers for these falsehoods. And once you get an army of people believing these false claims, then it's very hard to erase those from the public discourse.
You profile a bunch of, I guess we could just call them liars, in your magazine article, starting with a student at Princeton who seemed very unusual, enigmatic, accomplished, and it turned out he was all false. It was all a lie. Can you tell us about him?
Yes. So this is, this is somebody whose story has been told a few times before. His real name is James Hoag, and he was most recently arrested, probably for the sixth or seventh time, late last year from Colorado. Back in 1988 or 89, it was that he applied to enter Princeton University. And he wrote this application essay in which he claimed that he was a rancher. He had grown up really without parents, and he'd read philosophy under the stars. He was completely self-taught, and he was actually a champion runner. So that part of his resume was true, but everything else was made up. But Princeton fell for this story because it just seemed so enigmatic, so charming, so extraordinary, and Princeton wanted to live up to this idea that that they were looking for talent everywhere, not just from prep schools. And so in 1.5 years, he was recognized as a former convict. He had stolen bicycle parts, and he had been arrested, and he had been running from the law, and his story fell apart. So that's just one of the examples that I present in this story about liars.
And each of the people you profile is lying for a different reason. And it turns out there are a lot of different reasons that people may lie, but there are clusters that are a little more popular among them to benefit ourselves and to avoid some sort of negative consequence. So could you talk
Yes.
a little bit about why we lie?
Well, so the simple answer is that we lie because we want to protect our interest in some form or another. And usually we're lying because we want to cover up for mistakes that we've made that we're ashamed of, or mistakes that we know are going to lead to some serious penalty. We also lie to gain unjust rewards. CEOs of companies will lie to their shareholders so that they can hoodwink them into keeping their money in the company, which may be going bankrupt. We also lie to inflate our sort of sense of self-worth. We lie to create a false impression that may or may not be linked to a financial incentive, but simply because we want to impress other people. Those are just some of the bigger reasons why we lie. And then you have people who just tell malicious lies to hurt the reputation of other people. It may or may not be linked to their self-interest, and yet they do it. So there are all these reasons why people lie.
We're talking with Udijit Bhattacharjee right now, the author of Why We Lie in this month's National Geographic magazine. And Udijit, it's interesting. You look at when we first begin to lie, and there's an interesting spread. There's a graphic in your article that shows us when lying seems to peak for most of us. So can you talk about that kind of arc of lying?
Well, so children start lying, at the age of 3, 4, or 5, and they're not very good liars to begin with. But by the time they're 10, 11, they become quite skilled at lying. It turns out that lying is something of a cognitive milestone for developing kids. Once kids reach adolescence, in the teenage years, the lying seems to peak, and then it kind of drops down again when they're full-blown adults, but then pretty much remains constant up through later in life.
Do the brains of people who are more habituated, more used to lying, do they look different than people's brains who don't lie quite as often?
Yeah, you bring up a reference to an interesting study that I cover in the story. Researchers found that people who lie frequently and tell sort of big lies tend to have more white matter in their brains. Now, white matter is really the fibers that connect various nerve cells. And one takeaway from that study is the possibility that those who lie habitually have greater connectivity within their brains, allowing them to think up lies more quickly and readily than the rest of us. And then the other sort of possible interpretation of this is that that the habitual lying, or the lying habit itself, may be the cause for this kind of extra connectivity. But yes, you're right. Studies have found that liars, habitual liars, have brains that look somewhat different.
So a lot of interesting research surrounding why we lie, and you also write about one that looks at people who have to solve some math problems, and then they get paid based on how many they say they got right. What did we find out there?
Well, so this was a study that was done by a researcher at Duke University named Dan Ariely, and he sort of created this test where, people got 20 or so questions or 10 questions. These were like simple math problems, but they took time and they had limited time. Each of the subjects had limited time. And so there was this tendency among subjects, no matter where this experiment was conducted, across cultures, countries, to inflate the number of problems that they got right when they were, they had a chance to self-report how many problems they were able to solve. So there was this sort of, this X factor, this cheating that went on among subjects, which was initially surprising to Dan. But then later on, he was surprised by the fact that that subjects didn't lie any more than usual when the financial incentive for lying was increased.
Well, and it's also interesting, just briefly, that we don't that we lie even when we think we don't lie. We think, I'm someone who tells the truth, but if you actually kept a journal, it seems as though probably most of us are telling a couple lies maybe a day.
Yeah, you know, this was first sort of documented close to 25 years ago. There's a researcher named Bella DiPaolo out in California, who was the first one to sort of systematically study how frequently people lie. So so all these subjects, you know, maintained journals. They were asked to note down the lies that they had said through the day. And it turned out that that most people were lying at least twice or maybe more through the day, and that it was quite frequent. Now, granted, most of these lies were smaller lies, you know, told to spare the feelings of others. You know, if it was a girl rejecting a boy, you know, if she didn't want to go on a date with him, then she might say, "I'm busy," you know, that sort of lie. But there were also bigger lies, you know, things like, "I'm sick today and so I can't come into work," you know, which is a lie that I think many of us are familiar with because we've told it.
We're talking right now to Udijit Bhattacharjee, author of Why We Lie. That's featured in this month's National Geographic magazine.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about why we lie? Why do you think people lie? Do you agree that lying is part of being human? If you've lied about something big or small, why did you do it? How often do you think you lie and why? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll pick up the conversation and get to your calls in just a little bit. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our discussion now with Udijit Bhattacharjee, who wrote the cover story for the National Geographic June issue. It's called Why We Lie.
You can join in now with your questions and your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How often do you lie? Why do you do it? Is it okay to tell that innocent? Is it innocent lie to spare someone's feelings? Do you find it easy to forgive people who have lied to you? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And you did it at the end of your article. You're very sharing of yourself in this piece. You share a couple lies that you've told and things that you get wrong. And one of them is that you share an article that you later find out to be false, to not be good journalism and probably not to be based in fact. But you use it as an example about why it's so hard for us to change someone's mind, even when a lie, for example, might be exposed. Can you tell us about what you did and what it says about the way our brains latch on to what we believe?
Well, this is one of the counterintuitive things that I learned in the course of researching the article. You know, I've been puzzled in the past few months that there are certain false claims that have been made in the media about, you know, about the inauguration crowds, for example, at President Trump's inauguration. You know, things like that even go back further, like the lie about President Obama having been born outside of the United States, that have lingered in public memory, and they've been debunked time and again. You know, President Obama even put out his birth certificate eventually, and even then, there were people who refused to believe it. So what I learned is that even when you debunk a false claim over and over, that really doesn't do the job of erasing it from the public's mind. As long as you have some people who still believe it, they'll continue to believe it and they'll continue to propagate it. And the reason is that we tend to not be completely neutral when it comes to absorbing facts. We have a worldview and it slants one way or another. And because of our prejudices, we tend to give more credence to news or information that seems to fit our prejudices. And once we've absorbed that information, and it's gotten embedded into our psyche, then even when we're confronted with evidence to the contrary, you know, just clear, unambiguous evidence, we still sometimes will continue to believe what, you know, the false information that we were fed earlier. I could tell you, there was a story that I came across on social media about India's Congress Party, which is India's oldest political party, having been ranked as the most corrupt political party, among 10 sort of really corrupt political parties across the world, from China, from Russia, and so on. And I believed it. I posted it to a social media group that I'm a part of because I thought it was true. And I thought it was true because I'm not fond of the Congress Party. And I do think that they've indulged in corruption, and but it turns out that this particular news article was fake news, you know, and it had been written up on a website called BBC News or something like that that sounded authentic, that sounded like an extension of the British Broadcasting Corporation, and it really wasn't. So I sort of posted an apology and said, look, I posted to my social media group saying, this is fake news. I'm sorry, I withdraw this. And yet, days after I'd posted that, the same link was being forwarded on the same group as if the debunking had never taken place. And this seemed to fit exactly what researchers have told me about the problem that we face today in debunking fake news and countering it.
Let's go to our callers now as we talk with you, Digit Bhattacharjee, author of Why We Lie in this month's National Geographic. We've got Mona on the line in Madison. Mona, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about the difference in biological changes between hanging on to one great big lie for years and years versus just daily repeating, common white lies like, oh, you look fabulous when she doesn't, or something like that. It seems to me there'd be a difference because that big lie kind of like would eat at you or something and do other damage to your body, I would think.
Mona, thanks a lot for that question. And do we know anything about the effect on the brain or psychologically anyway of a small white lie versus kind of a whopper?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't have a direct answer to it, but I can sort of provide two insights that might address it indirectly. The first is something that I cover in the piece, which is that small lies kind of often pave the way to bigger lies. So once you get used to telling smaller lies, the brain somehow adapts and has less of a response to telling bigger lies. So there you have it. I mean, this is in the neuroscience literature. There's some kind of an attenuating response of the brain to lying. To the question of small white lies that we tell every day, I think we do make a distinction. We know that that lies really, the gravity of a lie depends on the intention behind telling it. A lie could destroy a marriage if it's a big dark secret that one spouse is keeping from the other. And a white lie like, oh, you look great in that dress, might actually go a little bit, towards saving your marriage. So there's clearly sort of a difference between those two lies. But But I do know that that for big lies, you know, there's self-deception at work. I mean, people are able to rationalize these huge lies by compartmentalizing everything else that's going on in their lives from this big secret that they're keeping from others, and they manage to convince themselves, they manage to rationalize that they're doing it for some bigger cause. You know, so every lie has its own set of rationalizations, no matter how acceptable or unacceptable they might be when looked at objectively.
And Tim from Marinette is next. Tim, we're pretty short on time, so just briefly, please.
Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering what your guests thought about this kind of a psychological evaluation, but when my kids were little, my son was about 8, my daughter was about 4, and we were missing $5, and I knew my son had taken it, and I peeked around the corner, and he flipped it out of his pants to have his younger sister find it. So when I saw that, I approached him, and I said, you know, I know that you took it. And he kept denying it and lying. And I said, you know, I'm not upset that you stole it. And he looked at me very strange. I said, what I'm upset with is that you lied.
All right. Well, Tim, thanks for that story. And you did. We've got about 10 seconds. What do you hear in that?
Well, you know, I think that's a familiar sounding story to many parents. I know that I've told my son and my daughter several times that it's really the cover up that I'm worried about, not the actual bad behavior or bad conduct. But you know, children will be children, and it's easy for us to say, tell the truth always. Mm-hmm. But there are times when they're going to lie. And I think we have to live with that.
Udigit, thanks so much for joining us. That was Udigit Bhattacharjee, author of Why We Lie, in this month's National Geographic magazine.